Dr. Catherine Halsey, service number CC-409871. Passcode. I shall do no harm. Hello, Podcast Evolved. I see you found my journal. You've been busy lately. I hope you find what you're looking for. For your sake, I hope we all do.
Welcome, Spartans, to another Halo Book Club, part of Halo Podcast Evolved, your home for Halo. I'm your host, Oren, and we have a very special book club episode for you today. With me today, from the team, we have Krista.
Hello.
David.
Hello, everybody.
And Aaron.
Hi, guys.
And also joining us today is Kat Peterson. Hello, Kat.
Hello.
You may know Kat online as C-Fox. She's a voice actress and does very convincing Dr. Halsey and Cortana impressions. We've reached out to her to join us for this episode. Special thanks to Installation 00 for kind of connecting us together. We kind of talked briefly about one of his series on one of our past episode collaborations where he talks about Dr. Halsey's journal. And so today we're going to be diving into Dr. Halsey's journal for this month's book club. It was with the Halo Reach special editions. And so we'll dive into that. We'll learn a little bit more about Kat as well and kind of who she is in the Halo community and kind of what she does and listen to some great Halsey and Cortana impressions. But before we dive right into that, just wanted to remind everyone about our website, halopodcastevolved.com. Has all of our episodes and social media and events and even some lore sections in there. If you want to catch up on past episodes or just learn more about a topic that we discussed, our other episodes, we have our regular Podcast Evolved main feed where we talk about the current news and topical lore. We have Mission Debrief where we go into every Halo campaign mission from all the games. Our newest show, Builds with Blocks, talks about the toys and macro action figures. And we also have Patreon if you want to contribute and help support us and get more sort of enjoyment from our show, more rewards. You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/halopodcastevolved.com. Special thanks to all of our patrons. We continue to see those numbers rise and we couldn't be more thankful. Aaron and I actually recently just got a equipment upgrade thanks to you guys using some shock mounts for our mics. So I hope the quality at least sounds a little bit better or at least makes editing it go more efficiently.
Fingers crossed, no one will hear me bashing my elbows into the desk.
And finally, if you want more to listen to, you can support Audible. They have a growing collection of Halo novels and audiobooks all in one place, as well as other originals and wellness programs and other podcasts to listen to. And you can go to audibletrial.com/podcastevolved. Now, with that, Krista, would you like to take us and introduce and get to know our guest today?
Of course. Hello, Kat.
Hello.
How are you today?
Doing just fine. How about yourself?
Pretty good. You are probably most known in the Halo community for that amazing Halsey slash Cortana voice that we heard at the top of the show. Thank you so much for that. We do really appreciate it. How did you get into Halo? Everyone kind of has this Halo story, you know, how they kind of discovered the game, the community, and that extended lore. What's your story?
Well, when it comes to Halo, I've always loved video games. Video games were probably my first true love, to be able to experience other worlds and have all of these amazing adventures. So for me, when I made my husband buy an Xbox because he needed a hobby.
Nice play.
What a win. Like, you need a hobby, get an Xbox.
It was wonderful.
And then you took it. You're like, this is mine now?
Well, about that. For about 6 months, he didn't realize that I was playing because I would wait until he went to sleep. And I would get on at night and play while he was asleep. And the only way he actually found out that I was playing Xbox was I forgot to change the controller scheme back. And it had taken 6 months for all of this to elapse. And it was quite amusing when he finally realized that, well, you see, I've been playing too, and I'm actually not terrible at it. And so we started playing together. In the early days, we would actually play Halo split screen together.
Classic.
Well, and it's really funny because, I mean, we were relatively newly married at the time. We were playing Halo 3 split screen, and it was super funny because, you know, what better way to have any kind of like marriage counseling of playing on the same screen and, you know, trying to play and not screen watch and comment on each other's playing styles and such. It's super funny because I'm very reserved. I'm a team player. I do a ton of callouts. And that's actually part of where, you know, all of the Halo stuff came, because I'd be making callouts on mic and people would be like, hey, who's the chick doing the, you know, Cortana, you know, callouts over there? Like, what's with that? But we'd be playing together on split screen, and it was just, you know, really funny because our play styles are so different. We'd always be commenting on back and forth on each other's playing styles, and it was super hilarious, just back and forth like that. But yeah, I fell in love with Halo then, the sense of community. We found some really great Halo family during the Reach days that we actually have made real life connections with and really invested in all of them. And there's a group of about six of us, which is great because when we're raid team, so we can go play other games and raid together and stuff like that. So, but they're real life family. And I feel that way about the Halo community in general. And that's, I think, how I'm known in the community is I try really hard to be positive, to be encouraging. I try extremely hard to listen to all opinions, even if they're ones that seem a little out there. I listen. I don't comment often on them, but I do listen. And I think a lot of people appreciate just being heard. And so that's what I do in the community. I'm also an artist. I do various Halo-themed art and things. That's just, Halo is a part of life for me, and I really love it.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's most of us here. It's just kind of, we all fell into it in one way or another, and it's become a big part of our life, and that's why we do the podcast, and we love the community so much. Speaking on your art, what mediums do you use? Do you have a favorite subject to draw?
When it comes to art, I'm one of those artists. I use art to explore the world around me and to be able to do all kinds of things. So I've made all kinds of Halo art. I don't know if you've seen, I did one of the engineer plushies.
Yeah.
I've done some various, like, almost 3D art pieces that are layered. I'm actually working on one of those right now as well. That's a Halo-themed one. It's going to be a Halo Reach-themed one. It'll be fun. But, like, any medium. I love painting. I love drawing. Whatever medium. I did a cake that was a Master Chief helmet.
Oh, nice.
I made it at like 4 a.m, so it's not perfect, but it was great because it was actually made as a groom's cake for one of our Halo family members because he had wanted a really cool groom's cake for his wedding, and so that's what I made at like 4 a.m.
4 a.m. is where all the creative energy comes from.
Exactly. It's peak time.
Your brain goes to that special place.
Indeed, autopilot engaged.
So when it comes to voicing Cortana and Halsey, it seems like you were always known for having a voice that resembles both of them. Was it installation that really got you into using that talent and kind of doing more voice work?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Installation, the first time he actually heard a small clip of me doing the Cortana Halsey voice, it was really funny because he was like, oh my gosh, there's so much potential here. And we ended up having a conversation and he was like super stoked because he's like, this is amazing. It's like I'm actually talking to Halsey. And he was so excited. we ended up trying the first one and it got interesting with the first one. Can I talk about this one yet with the difference between the episodes?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, you'll notice a difference between the first Halsey I did in the reading of the Halsey series for him and the second one, because we had initially done a much older Halsey that had more of the tone and the grit that you're used to if you're hearing the Halsey in the current games, which is familiar, but a lot of people wanted us to change it up and sound a little bit more like Cortana, and so we changed it. And so you'll notice a large difference between the episodes. And so we made that change, and we coordinate a lot more now back and forth on how Halsey would be feeling.
But that was so cool.
Oh. I think we're all kind of geeking out right now. I apologize.
Oh, I always enjoy doing the transitions like that between voices, so people can sort of like hear it morph. That's a lot of fun in voice acting stuff, especially when you're going from something that takes a lot more grit, like the older Halsey has a lot more vocal fry.
Did it take much effort to kind of work on those? I'm saying impressions in air quotes because I know it's mostly just your voice, but I know you probably had to change it a little bit.
The most difficult thing about the voices for Halsey and Cortana are the inflections that she uses. They're not the normal type of inflection that you would use to express things. And I think that's part of how she gets some of the feel of not quite human, is the way that she'll, instead of a word that you might usually go down, she'll go up instead. And it makes a big difference when you're speaking.
That's cool. I'd never even noticed that.
When you study the character, are you just listening to some of the lines that are delivered by Jen Taylor?
Usually, yes. I mean, I've played the games often enough that I'm one of those people that peanut galleries when I play through games anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm always just doing the voices. A scene will happen and I'll like mockingly do those voices and, you know, complete the scene in my brain of what's going on, or make funny little remarks in those voices afterwards. It's super, super fun for me. People that play campaign with me are like, that's interesting. And some people really find it fun. But yeah, I'm a total peanut gallery. So I'm always just sort of parroting things anyway, because I love different voices. And so I've always done that.
Quoting things as you go along. I do that too. You don't just do Halsey voices, right? You do a variety of different voices, and you do different voice acting gigs?
That is correct. I do a lot of different voices. I have done a number of different podcasts. A number of those are in my more natural speaking voice, because a lot of people find it very calming. I've also done a number of different YouTube or other storytelling things where I might use a voice that's a lot more like this, and it kind of freaks people out when they realize that, well, I can do voices like this, and then drop down to something like this, just, you know, at the drop of a hat. It freaks people out. But for me, it's fun. I enjoy range. I enjoy different accents. It just depends on how I feel during that day.
Live freestyle.
Well, that's one of my favorite things about being a voice actor, is to have the range to be able to be whatever you need to be to tell the story. Table reads are hilarious fun for me because, you know, especially if someone's missing and I get to play an extra part. Oh my gosh, I love that. Like, I can do old lady voices. You bet. It's all fun. For me, it's just like, hey, another voice. How fun. But yeah, you get to do a lot of interesting things.
So do you have a home setup for all of these voice recordings?
Indeed, I do. I have a booth that is pretty darn close to broadcast. I am a bit of a perfectionist, so as of yet, I don't quite call it broadcast, but it's pretty close.
What does broadcast mean, can I ask you? Is it the quality?
Broadcast quality means that you don't have any sort of noise, whether that's reverberation from sounds hitting walls or things like that, outside noise at all. I do still get a little bit of noise every once in a while from the vibration of the mic, but we've got most of that handled now. That was interesting.
How did you learn to set up create your studio for broadcasting?
Ah, that's a good question. Well, I actually have a live production background, funny enough, and I have done live production as a producer and event producer planner for many, many years. And so I have all of that experience from live production. And when it comes to moving the live production experience over to the voice acting, let's just say it's basically almost the same thing. So I was able to take that and use it here. I basically was trained in all aspects of live production, and I was the producer as well. So I made sure everybody knew what they were supposed to do. If any of my operators had to step out for a moment, I was able to operate all the equipment as well, whether that was audio, video, switching, anything like that. I was able to operate all of that. So I have been trained in many things. But yeah, it all translates.
That's super useful.
Was this for radio or movies?
It was live and simulated live production. We did a lot of different, it was like concerts, theatrical productions, like whatever that particular venue, it was a 1,000-seat venue. So whatever that venue had going on, I would produce. We also did a lot of like conference type events, and I was on the planning team for a number of those as well. So I am very familiar with how to plan and execute all of that. I find it a lot of fun for me. It's a challenge to be able to think through all the details. The details are the fun part.
Have you taken any formal voice training or anything like that? Or did you pick up any of that from the production side?
I actually have had a few mentors down the road, and I've taken a number of classes. I've always taken whatever theatrical classes, singing classes, anything like that that was available to me. We also had a number of different conferences that would come in that I could learn from while I was producing them. And so I have had access to a lot of, you know, crazy information. That was actually how I met my first voice acting mentor. And it was amazing because she was like, girl, this is something you need to do. You have to do voice acting. You were made for this. And so that was actually my first round of voice acting. How I got into that is she was my mentor, and it was a lot of fun because she had done video games. She had done radio. I mean, you could hear her doing, you know, like McDonald's commercials and things like that. I mean, she was all over the place. So it was amazing to have somebody like that have that confidence in you.
That's amazing. Circling back to Halo and Halsey, was even before you kind of got into portraying Halsey vocally, were you interested in the character or delved into any of the extended universe or novels before that?
I had read most of the novels that had come out to that point, and I'm behind a few right now. But I do enjoy the Halo novels, and I enjoy the different writing styles of all of them. I was always intrigued by Halsey as a character because she's a bit controversial in places. And
and because she's the best character?
She is the best. We're all Halsey lovers here. There are some haters out there, but
she's complicated, and I kind of feel a little bit similar to her in some ways because I'm not always that great with people. And so for me, I've always felt a little bit like I don't always feel like I belong in places, and I feel a little bit like every once in a while I'm misunderstood in certain situations, and I can sort of relate. I feel like Halsey is a lot like that in that she handles things a very specific way so that she can meter them and keep them under her control. And I feel like that's, you know, part of how sometimes I struggle with that, because I know that in social situations I can't be in control of that. I can be positive and try my best to interact with others, but you know, you have zero control over social situations. So it's always a little bit like, do I interact or do I not?
I usually choose not. I'm quite a wallflower as well. The mic is always easier to get behind. Do we want to segue into talking about the journal proper?
Oh wait, we're talking about the journal?
We can keep doing this.
Yeah, I could just do this.
I'm curious, have you read the Karen Travis Halo books, the Kilo 5 ones?
When did those ones come out?
Like 2011
to 14.
It was Glasslands, Thursday War.
I think I've read most of those. It was a while ago though, so my knowledge is going to be extremely rusty.
Those were the ones where they were painting Halsey as more of the villain. It was one of the first books to actually do that.
I think Halsey was always okay with being the villain.
Yeah, I was just curious to see what you thought of that sort of like change, because we only ever, in the old books, we get everything from Halsey's point of view. And a few times she admits to herself that she's doing terrible things, but kind of doing them for the greater good. And she's able to like wrestle her conscience with that. But then we get these new books where they show us Halsey from everyone else's point of view. And you've got all these hero characters that are just absolutely disgusted with this woman that could kidnap children in the middle of the night and experiment on them. And I'm just curious what you thought about that sort of different point of view of this character that we all like her, but we all know deep down inside she did some terrible things.
Think of it this way. If you had a way that you thought you could save humanity, what would you do? What would you sacrifice if you knew you could save humanity as a whole with only a few sacrifices? Sacrifices that very few people would ever realize.
Well, we can't argue with Halsey.
Halsey's always looking at, like, the train situation, right? Like, do you run over the three people or the one person?
Well, and for her, it's very logic-based. It's not emotional. Yes, she gets emotional in the journal when Haven is attacked because she can't fathom how someone would just kill innocent people. And that's really part of what sparks her, is she feels like she personally has to do something.
And she's probably the only one in the universe capable of doing it at the time as well.
Well, and because she's a bit of a narcissist, she believes that she is the one person that can.
The narcissism really got her far, though. Have you delved into any of the Forerunner, like, librarian stuff? Because there are theories going on that the Forerunner librarian kind of has been nudging Halsey along into making these kind of logical decisions and making AIs and stuff like that.
I actually had thought that when I was reading through the Forerunner trilogy, and I was like, oh, okay, I see that. That actually makes some of the Halsey stuff make a little more sense if the librarian had thought these things and had gone through all the effort of imprinting all of these imprints on people. There was a way that she would be able to affect Halsey in the future. I saw a lot of things that I was like, ooh, I feel like that makes that make more sense. Whereas some people may look at that and be like, okay, whatever. But for me, I'm like, ooh, I wonder.
It kind of does, though, because when you have a journal that we're about to get into, that from one person, and you see the breadth of the things she works on, her ability to multitask, it seems almost like too convenient that one genius can do all of these things straight out of nothing. But like, it's kind of clever to think that maybe the librarian is the reason why.
You've talked to Installation. He's one of those. He can do all the things. Those people do exist.
Those people are crazy.
It definitely feels like Halsey's almost taking the mantle of the librarian kind of in the universe right now, which is really cool.
I think she is very much like the modern Halo universe librarian. Like, there's an awful lot of similarity between the two characters. They've done a lot of things for the greater good, and they have the same sort of mindset behind everything when they sort of go about it. The librarian did the same thing to Bourne Stellar that Halsey did to John. Like, they're so very similar in that way.
Except I hope that John doesn't end up being Halsey's husband, because that would be weird.
Yeah, I don't think that would work very well.
I'm not into that, no.
That's a different Halo universe, Krista. We don't play with that one.
It's one of the fan fictions. That's something we could do. We could go through the fan fiction.
No, those are dangerous places, Krista. Dangerous.
Alright. Any other questions before we move on?
No, I think we can dive into the greatest Halo collectible ever to exist.
Oh, it's so good. I wish they would do more stuff like this. This is way better than a stupid statue, I gotta say.
Or just kind of a random little leaflet of, like, an Oni memo or whatever.
That's all we got in Halo 4.
That's what I was gonna say. I think that's kind of all the Halo 4 special edition was. Like, definitely the contents in this, and even just kind of the development of this. I mean, Bungie brought in Eric Nyland to come in and write all of this, and they had, like, a whole strategy, and pages are ripped out and only left in a few copies so then the community can kind of dive into it.
Don't call out our greatest failure, Oren.
We'll talk about that in a little bit, but just to kind of introduce it, Dr. Halsey's journal, like I mentioned at the top of the show, came with the Halo Reach collectors and special editions. It's a physical journal that came with those games that you can read and siphon through, and they have leaflets and memos and stuff that just falls out as you read it. It's pretty much what like the loot crate lore should always live up to be from those kind of packaged contents. But it came out in 2010. There really isn't a digital version. It's only whatever the Halo community's kind of uploaded to different web sharing sites, but there's no like Halo official release. It's or even physical and like in the purchable sense. It's pretty much just if you got it during the run of Halo Reach, then you have a copy. So there's a finite amount circulating in the world there. And it details sort of Halsey's thoughts from the 8th of August in 2510 to the 30th of August in 2552, which is basically when she starts to becoming familiar and working closely with Oni up until essentially the fall of Reach is kind of that block of time. David or Aaron, I'm not sure who wants to kind of kick things off from us, but I guess do we want to kind of introduce some of the things that she talks about in the book, and unfortunately there's just so much kind of just random thoughts throughout this book that we can't really go through every detail, but I think it is worth kind of diving into some of her mindsets and how they've changed over times and over years as we've kind of seen. I'm not sure where you want to start, but one of you can kind of just take it away.
One of the big things I kind of thought about this journal when I got it is just how much is in it and how well it does the job of being a journal of a genius level scientist, from what I can imagine, someone genius. But I love the idea that she essentially creates this journal as a way to keep certain thoughts out of her head, but not digital, because everything digital or electronic is hackable, especially from her level, where like she's given only a lot of the abilities to like hack all of those. I think they're pies and size, aren't they? They're like counter intrusion something, and then I can't remember what the other one is, but one is essentially one's defensive and one's aggressive in terms of algorithms for hacking computers and stuff. But I love the way like her journal is just like, you can't hack a journal, so I'm gonna make one.
Well, and she enjoys drawing.
That's the big surprise, I think, when I got out of it, how good she is at it. Like, she has a lot of freehand sketches and they look like they're done in pencil. Like, product itself, the quality of it is so good. You can see she's kind of sketched things in pencil, little notes in the margins.
And she has that blue highlighter. Where did she get that blue highlighter?
That's a blue highlighter. Like, obviously they got blue highlighters in the future, so that's one thing we can confirm from the journal.
They do have those now too, you know.
But they still have them in the future. That's so impressive.
But like even like the schematics for like the Mjolnir armor and like the Jackal shield, like the Jackal wrist bracelet that projects the shields that they use, like just kind of that sort of physical realness of it, to where you kind of see how it's designed and the kind of thought process to what we then see in game.
The thing about this that actually impresses me the most about reflecting Halsey as a character is how grubby it is in places, the coffee stains, the cup rings. Yeah. Like, we know back from Fall of Reach that Halsey's kind of a slob in some ways, because they have that scene, is it in Fall of Reach or Ghosts of Onyx, where she's rooting around her lab and she's going through like half empty coffee cups looking for the one that hasn't started to grow yet. And you're just like, oh, that's horrible, woman. Like, come on, please.
And there's even a massive portion in this book, which is she just lost it. And there's like years gone missing in it between. It's like it's a big time jump. And it's like, oh, I found my journal again. Great.
I thought that was interesting. And the bit where she was figuring out how to keep it secure in the future. And she was like, I could lace explosives across the seam of it. That seems like slight overkill.
That's actually really common with a lot of high level geniuses, is while they're thinking about things, that because their brain is doing multiple things at once, they miss certain things like that. There will be periods where it will be that messy around them because their brain is working on so many other processes that it just won't register that, hey, maybe I should clean that thing, or, you know, this or that. It's just, I'm working on a task. What is what is imperative to this task. And so I know people who are very intelligent who have that same thing where they literally will just pick up coffee cups until, oh, look, this one doesn't have mold. Let's go. And yeah, it's actually quite common for high-level genius people.
It's such a great attention to detail that someone in Bungie sat down and thought, this makes this book better, because if it never had a coffee stain in it, I'd have still thought it was amazing. But when you flick across a page and you go, oh, there's the ring of a cup, and you're like, oh, this all kind of like just fits together so nicely.
It fits with her, and it's great. It just like one of the main reasons why I love this journal so much is because, like, when we think about it, we've talked about it before, like, Halsey doesn't enter the games until Halo Reach, and that's like our fifth Halo game. And she shows up at the very end of the book. Even before then, before we get there, she was such a huge character in the Halo universe that we've never seen. Do you know what I mean? We had bits and pieces in other books, but like to actually have her in the game is so different. And then when you actually visually see this character, you hear her, you see the differences between her and her Cortana. And the journal that you get kind of totally segments that character and makes it so much more real, especially when you're getting so much. And I think it's got so much personality in it. And it's just like, there could be small entries in here. The biggest thing, one of the big things for me was the fact that it links her to Miranda, which I think at the time we didn't know. I think it was the journal that kind of revealed that Halsey and Jacobs had a baby together.
I think it was implied, like Halo Reach kind of implies an attraction and stuff like that.
The book?
Yeah, the book.
It certainly implies familiarity.
I love how the journal, like the first time she meets him, she's got a sketch of him and it's really well done. And I just like that totally shows. And she even has an underlined note, Jacob. And up to that point, you don't get her on a first name basis with like any other characters. That's not how she deals with people. And to see her gain a level of familiarity and be impressed with Jacob, I think is awesome. And obviously her relationship with her daughter is not great and becomes quite strained over time. Just to see little bits and pieces of, like, she will pay for making me drink decaf and all that kind of stuff. I thought was gas. Because obviously she was pregnant and not drinking, like, full caffeinated coffee at the time.
I love that one of the first things we learn about Halsey is of her deep love for coffee.
Just straight away, she's giving out about coffee on Reach is crap and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
I always thought that was gas.
A point that I really like that I kind of just chime in is, like, how the evolution of her kind of mindset kind of just grows throughout, because this is 25, 50, like 30 or 40 years as we get through of what she's thinking. And so to kind of see her sort of like timid nature a little bit, to where she still thinks from the get-go she's the smartest person in the room, but she still doesn't know, or she still kind of has some like trust to Oni to some degree, and like feel like she's like overcoming and being better than them, to then throughout the journal she just continues to just kind of take a stab or a jab at them because they're either hindering her for what she believes is right, or when she thinks she's being manipulative, she tries to kind of be counter manipulative, and it just continues to grow as then she grows as an older and wiser character through all of these life events.
Well, she's quite young, I think, at the start, isn't she? Be in her early 20s.
I believe she's actually 19 is what Installation figured out.
At the very start?
That's what Installation, I believe, figured out.
It's weird to think of Halsey anything outside of maybe like late 20s, early 30s. It's like Halsey was a kid at one point.
No way.
Well, she was always a genius, and so she was ahead of things in many ways, and especially with education. So for her, it was pretty appropriate. A lot of gifted students are often ahead in school like that.
Aaron, anything?
Sorry, yeah.
Aaron, go ahead, David.
Aaron, I've talked too much.
We don't want to hear you anymore, David.
I know. I can't do any cool voices. This is the only one I got.
You have an Irish accent, though, so you have that going for you.
That's true.
I don't have one of those.
We can coast on that for miles. We've got something there. Well, David has the better Irish accent, but, like, you know, I'll make do with what I have.
They'll coach you. They'll be your Irish coach.
My Irish always goes into Scottish. It's terrible. You don't want that. All the things. Irish into Scottish? That's not acceptable.
It's not too far off. Going through this, the first thing I find interesting is the fact that when you get at the start, Oni didn't really recruit Halsey. They waited for Halsey to figure it out and join them, which I thought was interesting that even back then they kind of had her figured out that I don't think they could have tempted Halsey into this particular line of work. She had to figure out that things were going to get very bad by herself, and then as soon as she figured it out, she rallied to the cause and joined immediately. I thought that was sort of, it's telling about her personality.
Well, I think that one of the lines in there is something to the effect of, they needed me to recruit me.
Yeah, that's the great line.
Not sure if that's exact wording.
It's very close if it's not that.
I did love that as well, how it starts off with that the Mate Carver's Matrix, his model of like the whole reason that starts with the Spartan program in the first place is that they're predicting a civil war with the other colonies and we need to stop this. And the only way they could think to stop it is like, you know, massive military presence, all that kind of stuff. And they're trying to avoid that or kind of like nip it in the bud, per se. But Halsey comes in, kind of refines the model and realizes, yeah, you don't have as much time as you think. It's way shorter. I need to get on board in this. I can fix this because I'm super clever. I just loved that's the basis of it. And I think we knew even from the Fall of Reach book that that's why the Spartans were created. They were there for the civil war prevention, essentially. They wanted this super unit of humans that could go in instead of fleets of ships and kind of like take care of problems before they became too serious. And then it's just super convenient that they're also amazing at killing aliens. I love that the journal, that segment of the journal where you get first contact, how it changes.
Oh yeah, the tone is just complete, like, oh, it's great.
Oh, it's so good. And then you get kind of little bits of like, how would you deal with like an actual alien race, like when the first contact's so aggressive? And when she breaks down the word covenant and what it means and then tries to apply to that, to they're calling themselves the covenant, so we can infer certain things about them by how they refer to themselves. So that was super cool and how it breaks that down. And it's kind of gas to see the struggle with the technology. And then when she eventually kind of realizes, she stops thinking of them as being more intelligent than humans, just more technologically advanced. I thought that was kind of a great turning point as well. And then we've seen that in the games and even the lore as well and stuff like that, that humans can win under certain circumstances. And then you see where we're better in some certain cases. And AIs and the Spartan programs have been the reason, really, that we've stood the test of time in the lore. And I love how the journal shows that and how she gets more frantic. One of the ones I love, one of the engine journals I love the most, I think she watches the destruction of Bliss. I think it's Bliss, is it? Or no, it's Arcadia. And like she like hacks into like a survey satellite and watches it. She makes herself watch it to see as much as she can learn. And she said it was agony to watch a human planet of millions, billions be like glassed.
I wonder if that also kind of just solidified kind of some of the things that she needs to do in order to save humanity with like the Spartan program and stuff, some motivation.
Yeah, her moral justification of like, I can stop this by doing what I'm doing now. I thought it was great. It was great for that. And the journal is great for setting up who Halsey is, because you get one side of her from like, let's say the game, very aloof, you don't really know. But I loved reading the journal entry after that, after she met George and what impact that had on her that you don't get to see. And it's different than when you go back and play the game. I love it when it does it. You go back and play the game, you watch that segment again, and you're like, you know now what she's thinking. And it kind of changes it for me. It changes it for the better, I think.
Well, and I think Halsey's really good at kind of putting up a front as well. She's not going to be very upfront about how she's feeling, because that makes her vulnerable.
Oh, it's not very practical or logical.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think the thing I enjoy going through this is watching her pull all the parts together to make the Spartans, because she's kind of playing with this idea for a while, and she's playing about with Project Orion and where it went wrong, and she sort of hints at, I think I figured out how we need to fix this, but I don't want to say it out loud yet because it's morally questionable. So she's already thinking, you know, adults aren't the way to go, it's kids. And then she starts to refine like some of the processes.
I love that. That segment's awesome, yeah, where she kind of details what the program has to be. Kids, indoctrination, you have to do this and do that.
She like breaks down the Orion Project and kind of like where it failed and kind of like how it can be just tweaked, and through her logical and rational thinking, it just kind of landed on, oh, it needs to be a bunch of children.
The subject needs to be prepubescent.
And she, it's just like, while it's like, while she's like thinking and writing and talking to herself and doing it all, she instantly realizes like the morality sort of implications of that and has to quickly internalize it and kind of move on.
Yeah. And like, while you've got all this going, she's also basically creating modern AI in the Halo universe, and she's figuring this out as well. And you see like her first hints at what leads to Cortana, where she's trying to figure out how to transfer memories into a clone brain and slowly develop all this stuff. And then like they always, this book builds on so much that touches back to stuff later. Like you play Spartan Ops in Halo 4 and she hacks Roland and carries on. And then you realize that's because she had a hand in all the AIs that came before, specifically like him. So she has all this inside knowledge, and they just build it all up quite nicely here.
What happened to the third brain?
Yes, there's other brains. Oh God, that whole segment of when it gets into the deep AI stuff, some of it goes over my head because it's crazy stuff. It's so fascinating that she went down this dark route herself, realized the best material is mine.
I'm the best to be an AI.
She made like four clones of herself. One of them eventually becomes Cortana. One of them goes to slip space, which is crazy. Chris, I'm going to ask you to kind of explain that, because I did read the Torn segments. They're probably worth talking about now, but like it's mental. And then she has another two. Is it two brains left? I can't remember.
I think she has three brains left.
She's three brains left.
I think it said specifically she puts three into cryostasis to save for, I think she has like later technological advances.
Oh, here, yeah. Sorry, I have the segment now. I'm looking at it. She theorizes the idea of using three AIs to create one, and kind of like how that would work.
Like a trimunitive or whatever.
This AI may not necessarily die after 7 years. It could potentially balance the load between the three of them and stuff like that. So I guess we theorize that maybe that's what these three brains could be for, and what she's going to do with them. Oh, it's so crazy. But the torn out pages, I think it's cool. I might just drop that bit of trivia in here. So
yeah.
A small number of copies of the journal, no more than five, according to Eric Nyland, did not have two of the missing pages ripped out. This was so the Halo fan community could discover the pages on their own. He expected them to find the pages within a few weeks. However, the pages failed, and we all failed, to surface until May 6, 2016, when it was our own Jeff Easterling, that's right, he's ours, posted them into Cannon Fodder, called Noble Intentions. I thought this was mental, because I remember when that happened and when they got posted, because I'd totally forgotten that there was pages missing in the journal. I remember getting to it and being like, oh, they're gone. I never thought of it ever again. I'd love to know what was on them, but I was like, they're gone. Obviously, they're not meant to be in the book.
I also think that one of the problems with Dr. Halsey's journal being part of the Halo Reach Collector's Edition is most people probably bought it for the Noble statue and not the journal. So the people who bought it for the Noble statue probably just put Dr. Halsey's journal on a shelf and never opened it. So if they had one of the copies with the pages in it, they're not going to be vocal about it. They don't know what they have.
Or they may not even realize that it was missing pages, too.
That's what I'm thinking. If I, all those years ago, had have got this copy and all the pages were in it, I never would have questioned it again. Like, we'd have been sitting here now, I'd have been like, what pages are missing? I wouldn't have put two and two together at all. I'd imagine someone out there sitting with a thing going, oh, this was important, was it?
Well, all the pages were hand-torn, and some of mine were slightly less well torn, so I definitely noticed some pages missing.
They were hand torn, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely noticed on some of them. I was like, there was a page. Where is my page? I want my page.
And those pages have some really weird stuff.
So she talks in the early stages of the book of like, the problem with the AI is a thing of space, that they take up too much space and eventually like they think themselves to death. So what if space wasn't a problem? I.e., what if we put them into a place where there is no limits on the space, or, you know, outside our dimension, which is inside slip space? And I think the RIP pages, they kind of detailed what she did. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, so she talks about how she put the AI out there with a probe that let her know what the AI was doing. And not very soon after she put the AI into slip space, it started, of course, becoming extremely intelligent, making huge logical leaps, developing a bunch of new mathematics that Halsey herself couldn't even really keep up with. And then it started to get really weird. Super, super, super weird. It started just random babble and stuff like that. Something that was completely incoherent to a human. And so Halsey was like, oh shit, this isn't good.
Uh-oh, what'd I do?
And I think at one point the AI just kind of stopped transmitting, and Halsey's like turned off everything, ripped the pages out of the journal, and was like, well, I hope that problem solved itself.
Let's just say that never happened.
That's what she did.
Her answer in the lab is to just go like, well, I hope it's dead. And you're just like, that's not the answer, Halsey. Did anyone else get a slight grave mind vibe about it as soon as she says super intelligent starts to babble a bit? And I'm like, uh-oh.
Maybe.
It's our savior. It'll come back and save us all.
Maybe it encountered a Forerunner AI that might be in slipspace or something like that. It's hard to say because they haven't really... This event hasn't really been mentioned since because only Halsey knows about it. And we haven't seen any implications of it just yet. But it's one of those... This journal does an amazing job at putting threads out there that never quite get tied up, which makes it extremely relevant even now, years after the journal was even written. All of the stuff in it is still very speculative and interesting and could affect the Halo universe as we know it today.
Especially because we know that the setting of the next book, its purpose is to go back to Reach, go back to Halsey's lab. Or do we know it's Halsey's lab or is it just back to Reach?
No, it's back to Halsey's. I think it specifically says back to Halsey's lab.
Does it? Okay, so at least that really gives us kind of ties that now we know that if you're going back to Halsey's lab for something, that maybe the journal that existed during her period there is can contain something.
I don't think the journal's there. The journal was...
Oh, not the physical journal, but like, let's say there is something in this journal that is probably we're going back to get. Do you know what I mean? It could be technology, it could be notes, could be a brain.
I've said this a couple of times, I'm more than convinced it's the brains.
Yeah, I would say, because we see Cortana in one of the Halo Infinite trailers, so...
That's true.
There's also the giant Forerunner compound below Castle Base, where they got the crystal, so like there could be more than just that crazy crystal that we got in First Strike below Castle Base that could be discovered as well.
Also, the latchkey discovery that we have no idea what it is, that they keep talking about.
That's true. The data was corrupted, I think that's what she said in this. Anyway, it's cool that this thing that came out years ago is still relevant now.
It's probably one of the most relevant pieces of Halo lore. It's really interesting.
And I love that it's like, it is in itself in canon. It's in games. They talk about it during Halo 5 trilogy. Like, various characters read it, which I think is great. And, you know, BB talks about it a lot. And you can actually see it in Halo Reach. You can find it in the level of the package in the tribute room. I thought that was really cool.
It's in a cutscene in Halo 5.
I was about to say, yeah, it's in a cutscene in Halo 5, which is pretty cool.
When she's, like, talking to Locke. It's a good cutscene.
Does anyone have anyone else, any kind of cool things from it? I'm trying to think, because other than, like, the starting, the training, I thought was really cool with Spartan Program of, like, some of the things, like, her observations of the candidates and stuff. One of them stuck out that I'd completely forgotten about, which is a Spartan who never became a Spartan named Caleb. He was a kid they went to get, and they said he has markers that suggest precognitive abilities. So when they went to go get him, he knew they were coming, so he wasn't there. So they never abducted him, and he's still down as Caleb, I think it's 096, something like that. I thought I had highlighted there, but he came, one of his, like, what are they called? Candidate records came as, like, a bonus feature. I thought that was really cool, that he's just out there. They never find him. They don't know where he is.
Well, and this journal also talks about the failed Spartan candidates that Halsey hopes to rehabilitate and make fully fledged Spartans. It kind of goes over the fact that only a very, very minimal Spartans actually died from the augmentations, ones that couldn't be saved now are in cryosleep that she's hoping to save later. So I thought that was interesting.
That gives us red team in Halo Wars. Like, they have come from the rehabilitation program, so we have...
But they're not... They were rehabilitated around the same year, because when you think about when red... Like, when Halo Wars happens, like, that's relatively close in timeline to them being created, as opposed to imagine pulling out a reject now. How many years? 40 years?
Yeah, that kid will still be... That'll still be a kid, like a 14-year-old.
That you can then make into a... Imagine getting a new, quote-unquote, new unit of Spartan 2s. That's awesome.
There's always Spartans in the freezer for another book.
It's great that they have, like, this journal has so many threads they can pull off if they wanted to and create a new character or go back to another. It's cool.
Another good kind of section of the book is her struggle with, like, the Spartan 3s, because Mendez is missing, and she's like, oh, that's weird. And then, of course, she meets Noble Team, and, you know, all this stuff happens, and she doesn't mention Ackerson, like, formally, but you know she's pissed off at him.
Is that the Vice Admiral she refers to?
No, that's Parangoski is the Vice Admiral.
It's not, actually.
It's
is it not?
They say it's Vice Admiral Michael Stanford is referenced throughout the journal as the Vice Admiral, but he's never mentioned by name. I thought that too. I thought it might have been Parangoski, but I think it's not.
It's interesting that she doesn't mention Margaret at all, because we know they worked pretty closely to develop the Spartan program.
Yeah.
But that might have been because Margaret wasn't written yet in the Halo universe. Ghost Savonics, was it?
She was in those, yeah. She should be, I think.
Yeah, I think that's when they mention her.
She doesn't mention, like, any particular people in Oni, like, at all. There's a few other scientists who she mentions, but, like, there's very little, like, she doesn't talk about individuals in Oni. She talks about Oni as, like, a group every now and again that, you know, they're against her, their new policies or whatever, they're doing that. It's rare that she would call out somebody by name in her journal.
Oni always has an agenda.
Yeah, exactly.
She probably has an inkling that Oni might end up with the journal in some way. So to actually, like, call out people from Oni itself might incriminate her in some way. Not that the journal already doesn't incriminate her, but...
I think they kind of, like, in the Kilo 5 books, they mention that at one point. I think it's Baby that says, like, she wrote this journal and left it clearly as, like, an attempt to soothe her conscience in later life. You know, she thought the journal would outlast her and put something forward that the Spartans would read. So I think, like, it's part of what she's doing with this is just putting her version down, although very few people tend to agree with her version of things in the later universe.
Anything else? We're getting to about that time. Kat, is there anything in particular that I think you've kind of been more supporting? Is there maybe something that you stuck out to you, like, reading this all, or maybe a new perspective when you were doing the series with Installation 00?
Well, as much as we haven't completed the series yet, but from my readings through the journal, I really felt like she was just trying to find her way in a way that she could be of use to humanity. You can see her as evil, you can see her as good, but at the end of the day, she's human, and I'm really glad that the journal kind of shows you that. She might have social issues, yes, but a lot of us do. She's human. There's nothing wrong with being human. We all handle things differently, and while it doesn't excuse war crimes and kidnapping of children, we all have our own path.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that she saw her shortcomings. You see it time and time again, the whole way through the diary, where she broke it off with Keyes. She still missed him, but she knew she wasn't good for him. She gave Miranda up to him, the same thing, like she knew she wasn't good for that. And then she hints at, I think Miranda reaches out to her for her medal ceremony before she gets the Enamber Clad, and Halsey's like, she wants me to come, I should go, but I know why I'm not going to. She's sort of accepting of a lot of her flaws, and she knows that she has them, which I think a lot of people in the universe don't think. They just think she's insanely intelligent and arrogant about everything, but Halsey knows where Halsey comes up short.
And she doesn't try to also fight her flaws. She just kind of accepts them as being part of herself and moves forward.
Yeah, I think that's why she didn't go to the ceremony. She didn't want her reactions and her reflections to reflect on her daughter.
Also, I also get the impression that she's protecting her. Because she says, like, she has many enemies even within Oni. And I'm sure the more distance she keeps between her and her daughter, she probably thought in her head was protecting her too from them.
Definitely.
It's quite a tragic story between her and Miranda, actually. And it's very subtle in the book, but when you kind of know the character a bit more deeply, it's really sad.
Yeah.
Because in Glasslands, she's really, really kind of broken up about it, even though she doesn't kind of express it a lot.
They hinted at once, I think it's BB. He's sort of reeling in his glee of Halsey's like suffering in later life now. And he mentions how she's just like broken up, lying in the brig of the Infinity every night, just calling Miranda's name. And it's just like, that's a horrible sort of end to a character. Although, thankfully, she kept going from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, that scene at the end of Halo 5, I'm like, oh my god.
Yay! Yeah. I can't wait. I'm really hoping she comes back as some kind of main character in Infinite. Like, it's what I want. More Halsey time. I never get enough Halsey time.
I think we're all curious to see what's in store for Halsey.
And hopefully we don't have to wait too much longer. As of recording, this is towards the end of July of 2020, and so we'll be well into the news cycle by the end of the month, as well as into the coming months leading up to the release. So we hope to learn more about that, and we'll of course be discussing about that on our other shows as we move through the rest of the year. I think we'll kind of wrap it up there, unless anyone has any last minute things to kind of contribute.
I have a final question. Kat, this episode's going to come out after the Xbox showcase, but what do you think about how 343's kind of been handling Halo Infinite? We've gotten quite a drought of information, and I think everyone has an interesting take on it.
As someone who spends a lot of time understanding the community, watching different opinions and things like that, I think part of the reason they're doing it is because they're really trying to do what they can to make something that will appeal to a lot of people. Halo is a game built on nostalgia, whether you like it or not. The way that you first experienced Halo is infinitely tinted by the way that you were at that time, and still is to some degree. That's why some people are like, Halo 2, best Halo, or other people are like, no, CE, best Halo. Nostalgia is the answer. And so they're trying to be very considerate of that nostalgia. And whatever direction they take it, I know they've taken a lot of time to listen and try their best to really get an essence of what Halo is to so many people, because there are so many different opinions. Whether or not you love Sprint, whether or not you think Jetpack ruined Halo, or different things like that. There is a big weight on their shoulders, and they understand that. And I know they're really trying, and I know there's a ton of people who are like, no, 343 is evil. But you gotta understand, they've been given something that is precious to a lot of people. Not just you, not just me. There's a whole world of people. Like, people in other countries. I know that there's, we don't get to see a lot of it, but there's a huge South American and Brazilian and, like, all over the world. Like, I know a ton of Australian Halo players. All over the world, people love Halo. And whatever they do, I honestly think they're trying their best to make something that will stick in our brains as, wow, this is Halo.
That is beautiful. One more follow-up question, because we were talking about this before the show. You went to Outpost Discovery. Which one did you go to, and what was your experience with it?
I went to the Outpost Discovery in Chicago. Had a wonderful time there. Lots of really great people. I got to meet Jen and Steve, which was one of my favorite things because I made Jen laugh. And for me, that was a big thing.
What was that like meeting her with your voice?
You're just talking to yourself.
Well, it was for a photo op. So, and of course, they're trying to hurry everybody through the line. And when I step up there, I say to Jen and Steve, because it was a Jen and Steve one. And I was like, you know, I have this problem. Whenever I'm in Xbox Live parties, People tell me I sound like you, and I'm not sure I do, but, you know, I just thought you might want to know that, that I think it's hilarious that people think that I sound like you. And Steve kind of looks over and he's like, nah, I hear it. And of course, Jen laughed, and it made me happy that Jen laughed at that. But yeah, it was great for me. I got to meet a lot of really cool people, a number of the staff of 343, as well as a number of the voices, Tim Detto. It was absolutely amazing. I got to meet some of the YouTube crew as well, so like Late Night Halo and some of the lore guys. It was really amazing.
I really hope they continue. I know we can't in the world today, right now as it is, we can't have events like this, but I think it really brought the community together. So I'm hoping we see more of Outpost Discovery. I went to the Orlando one, and that was the first one, and it was a bit of a mess, but it was quite fun still. Just to start wrapping it up, Kat, do you have anything you'd like to bump? Your Twitter? Any videos? Any current or future projects?
Well, actually, it's funny that we were talking about the Spartans that were the Reject Spartans, because I actually just got onboarded for the second season of Machinima. It's not a super well-known one, but it's called Recall. And the thought behind it is that these are some of these Reject Spartans, and it goes and follows some of their story.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you guys said that, and I was like, that is hilarious. But yeah, it's, it totally fits, and I got onboarded for one of the characters for that for their second season here soon, so the teaser is out for that. But yeah, I mean, anybody that wants to connect on Twitter, I'm sure that my Twitter will be listed somewhere. It's a little tricky to spell, but, you know, it's all good. But yeah, I'm doing that. I'm doing the stuff with installation. Number of small other things that aren't out yet, so I can't say.
Ooh. We'll have to follow you and stay up to date on what those things become.
So is the best place to do that on Twitter?
I connect a lot with the Halo community on Twitter, yes.
So it's at CXEEFOXX on Twitter. And we'll put that into the description for anyone who would like to connect with you.
I had fun, you guys. Thanks a lot.
This has been a very amazing experience. You sound
really trippy.
Just like Alti.
I'm so glad you are all right with my peanut gallery comments. I do that a lot.
Oh, we love it. We love it.
It was fantastic. So we very much thank you again for joining us, and we hope our listeners really enjoyed it as much as we did. I do want to thank Installation00 again, YouTuber, for those of you that missed our interview with him. We talked about
Good old Erky,
the Office of Naval Intelligence, and so just he was able to link us up, so thank you again for that. If you really like this episode and you want to find more, we're on Spotify and Apple iTunes, and you can find all of our episodes on our website, like I said at the beginning of the show. You can leave us a voicemail if you want to give us a call, talk about this episode or just anything else Halo related at 205-386-5833. And until next time, everybody, I've been your host, Oren, and Evolved!
Evolved!